This is the Reason Podcast, and I'm your host, Nick Gillespie. In Tuesday's State of the Union address, President Trump spent a big chunk of time talking about cracking down on human traffickers and sex traffickers who take advantage of the wide open areas, he said, between our ports of entry to smuggle thousands of young girls and women into the United States and to sell them into prostitution and modern-day slavery. He touted 1,500 arrests by Immigrations and Customs Enforcement, or ICE agents, and other people in the Department of Homeland Security as part of his focus on this supposedly large and growing problem. My guest today for the podcast is Elizabeth Nolan Brown. She's an associate editor at Reason who writes frequently about sex work, human trafficking, and related issues. We're going to talk about the president's claims in a bit, but first we're going to talk about an incredible story by Liz that went up earlier this week that we've just posted at Reason.com. It's titled, Are You a Woman Traveling Alone? Marriott Might Be Watching You. And it details how major hotel chains, such as Marriott, but others as well, have been enlisted by government agencies to be on the lookout for sex trafficking victims in ways that threaten the privacy and dignity of law-abiding guests. That is the topic for today. Liz, welcome to the Reason Podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Explain what's going on at Marriott Hotels.
Yeah, so this kind of started, this is an issue I've been following for a while and wanting to write about a lot of these issues in the article, but it sort of gave me a good news hook to do it last week because Marriott was talking about how it gave all of its staff, all 750,000 employees around the world, this anti-trafficking training. And then someone tweeted, you know, like, I've seen this training, or my friend went through it or something, and, you know, Marriott is training its staff to, like, look for single women at sitting at their bars and sort of keep an eye on women travelers who are going alone and try to tell who's an escort or not. And the Marriott official accounts on Twitter responded, you are correct. We've trained all of our staff to stop sex trafficking or whatever or something like that. So they definitely said, you know, you are correct, and sort of confirmed that this was, you know, that this was a program to sort of that was keeping tabs on women. They deleted the tweet, and a spokesperson who I emailed with said, you know, no, that wasn't, they're not watching for all female travelers alone. And, you know, and I think, you know, like, that's sort of true. Like, I mean, I don't think that they're literally watching for all female travelers and stuff, but it does sort of show that, you know, the scope of this program that they're participating in, which is much wider than Marriott, as you said, and we'll get into that. But it's, you know, the scope of this program is very blurry. Its boundaries are very blurry, and it definitely is going to, it sort of is open to interpretation in all sorts of ways that lead to profiling, not just of, you know, not just of women, but of other, you know, religious minorities, racial minorities, like different ethnic groups that get stereotyped. So I think it's just sort of going to, you know, it opens to all sorts of profiling.
So before we go further, explain the difference between sex trafficking and sex work, you know, just kind of as you generally employ those terms.
Yeah, I mean, sex work is a broad term that includes all sorts of things, including prostitution and also, you know, legal things like strip clubs and all sorts of, and porn. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in this context, we're generally talking about prostitution, and, you know, people who engage in that are called sex workers. That's their preferred term now.
Right.
It implies consent. It implies people being adults and engaging in something, you know, freely. Sex trafficking, on the other hand, implies either force or coercion or someone being underage. That's the definition of it under federal law, is either age or force.
And it's clear that a lot of the times when we hear public accounts of this, whether it's from the government or in the media, those two terms kind of get conflated very quickly, right? Where it's hard to know where prostitution, you know, ends and sex trafficking begins.
Increasingly all the time, that's the case, yes, in both media and, like, press releases from government and in political speeches like the one Trump gave.
So let's assume that Marriott has, you know, they have 750,000 worldwide employees, and they train them to say, like, hey, here are telltale signs of, you know, that this person in the bar, or this person checking in, or I don't know, you know, in the jacuzzi or whatever, in the hot tub, is actually kind of being held in some kind of sexual slavery. Is that a bad thing?
No, not in and of itself, obviously. I mean, and I think that the idea that this would be a part of things that Marriott, you know, I'm sure they do all sorts of corporate training for their employees. The idea that this would be, you know, a brief sort of part of things that they tell, you know, things that they might tell their employees, is that is obviously not at all objectionable, and, you know, probably a good idea. But it's this the way the program is set up. First of all, I mean, yeah, so the signs sort of given, they worked with these two nonprofits to put it together. And a lot of the signs that are given are just very, you know, very either based on stereotypes or just things that like apply to anybody, like, you know, looking sleep deprived or fatigued at a hotel. Mm-hmm. I'm saying having too many condoms in your room. So all these things that are, you know, definitely not at all indicative of sex trafficking. But I think that the bigger problem is not so much. I mean, I think that probably in some rare cases that'll lead to just, you know, like random, you know, travelers being harassed. I think, you know, mm-hmm. like a lot of times, especially single women and especially or like dads with teenage daughters, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, like I could see it getting people a little bit of suspicion raised, but not a lot of trouble. But the problem is where it comes in is that there's this connection with the Department of Homeland Security involved in
yeah,
all of this.
So talk about the Department of Homeland Security Blue Program and what, you know, and the role that that plays in all of this, because this is not a, we'll get to the nonprofits in a minute that you alluded to earlier, but this is not something that is just kind of, springing fully formed from a corporate, you know, sense of responsibility, right? What's the Blue Program and how is that kind of at the root of a lot of this?
If this was either a good program or just a sort of whatever, sort of dumb but corporate, you know, useless corporate feel good program, I wouldn't be writing about it. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. it'd be like, oh, that's, you know, that's objectionable, but whatever. But the thing that I think makes this really both interesting from our standpoint, from a libertarian standpoint, and also, I mean, to everybody too, from a civil liberty standpoint, mm-hmm. and just very scary, is that Marriott and a bunch of other hotels are doing this with a lot of pressure and a lot of involvement from federal agencies and sort of federally funded nonprofits. The Homeland Security Blue Campaign is something that started in 2010, and it borrows the sort of old post 9/11 see something, say something mm-hmm. model, and it sort of has been, you know, progressively expanding the groups of people that it either strongly suggests or in some cases requires, as Obama actually had an initiative saying that all transportation or TSA staff have to be trained. So I might be getting that wrong. It was either airlines or TSA staff. But anyways, mm-hmm. airlines, TSA staff, hospitals, truckers, hospitality staff in hotels, things like that are increasingly getting this training. And that is sort of encouraged by or in a lot of cases just directly provided by Homeland Security and immigration agents. And
what,
it tells them...
I'm sorry. Go. Continue,
yeah, just,
please.
I think the one important, really important thing is that on all of these things, it tells them not, you know, call your local police if you think something is happening. I mean, some of them do say, like, well, if it's extreme emergency, call 911. But then they don't say, call the local police or whatever. They say, mm-hmm. report it to the ICE tip line. And they give you an ICE tip line phone number and website that you can report it to. Hmm. Which sort of gives away that this isn't, you know, this if this was about, you know, you see someone who you think is maybe, you know, one person with a pimp at a hotel, you would want the local police to come right then. You
right.
wouldn't want to open up a Homeland Security investigation. You'd want them intervention right then, but also on a smaller scale than a national security emergency.
Right.
And that's not what they're encouraging.
Well, and and this was certainly true in Trump's discussion in the State of the Union, the kind of conflation of immigration and sex trafficking or human
yes.
trafficking, because, you know, and I mean, do you know how do hotels deal with prostitution? Because, you know, it's a feature of hotels. One assumes that, that there are escorts or prostitutes or whatever, you know, working the bars or the common areas and hotels or meeting people there and whatnot. Do most hotels, I mean, you know, do they have a kind of like wink and a nod policy, or do they actively try to make sure that, you know, their places are, kind of prostitute free?
I mean, from what I understand, it's just a wide variety of things.
Mm-hmm.
I think that obviously back in the day, it was probably a lot, you know, more accepted. I think that there are, but there have always been, you know, like family friendly hotels who would probably not accept that.
Right.
I think that a lot of it is probably most just mainstream hotels probably just don't care as long as it's not blatant. You definitely have, you know, sort of drive-in sort of low pay hotels that probably just, you know, don't really care if it's happening
right.
there. They expect it, and it's part of their business model. But the thing is that now they're also facing increasing attention. They're facing both like I said, pressure from Homeland Security and other agencies to sort of do more things to discourage all prostitution from taking place on the premises. But they're also facing lawsuits, a lot of lawsuits, because it's sort of become a thing with a bunch of new sex trafficking laws that have made it easier to sort of hold third parties accountable. Mm-hmm. A lot of lawyers have wanted to start taking advantage of that. And I was actually reading all these insurance magazines that were, or in hospitality industry magazines, trade stuff that was talking about how, like, you know, they're all counseling their hotel businesses and stuff to now look into, like, human trafficking insurance and stuff, because there's all these, and by human trafficking, they're just meaning prostitution. That's, they're pretty much, they use that interchangeably, but they're, mm-hmm. you know, they're afraid that prostitution is going to take place on their premises. And then someone is going to say, like, oh, if it turns out someone there was underage or was an undocumented immigrant or whatever, and then they're going to be sued. And then,
how often is it that people, and I guess it's overwhelmingly, but not exclusively, women that are arrested as prostitutes or as being trafficked are immigrants, legal or illegal?
I don't know that, actually. But I think, you know, one of the problems you run into, though, is that if you have immigrants who are legal or illegal, who are engaging in sex work, and they're just being arrested by local police. So, you know, say, because a lot of times if someone, a hotel staff or a busybody employee who sees these signs saying, look out for, you know, sex trafficking in hotels, and they see someone who's an adult sex worker engaging in prostitution, those are the people that are most likely to get, you know, called. So they call the police. At least that person just gets, you know, taken in, maybe gets a misdemeanor prostitution. I mean, I'm not saying that's nothing, but that's, you know, that's what they're dealing with. If you have Homeland Security and federal agents intervening here, then you have them sometimes just getting swooped up by ICE if they're undocumented, or even if they're not, because they've been, you know, once they're in jail, they can, you know, if they've been charged with prostitution, they're guilty of a crime, then they'll be taken to ICE detention center. So, yeah. So it's just much more precarious that you have this, that you have federal agents involved in you know, effectively prostitution stings all the time now.
So what are Polaris Project and ECPAT USA, and how do they figure into this, you know, heightens sensitivity at Marriott and other hotel chains?
Yeah, they're both nonprofits that get a lot of money from the federal government to effectively just sort of perpetuate their own existence as awareness raising charities about sex trafficking. They don't really provide any services or anything like that. They lobby a lot for stricter laws. ECPAT was a big lobbyist behind FOSTA, the law banning prostitution, federal law banning prostitution ads that passed last year. So, you know, right now, one of their new big campaigns has been trying to get states to require all hotel staff, or sometimes all, you know, staff across a broad array of industries, to get this training that they conveniently develop, and therefore then sort of control the narrative about what is, you know, what is necessary. Also, they are, you know, getting money from either to train people or to lease their program that they wrote. Mm-hmm. And they're the ones that work together with Marriott on this training that it's now offering to its staff worldwide.
And I think in your piece, you mentioned that Polaris Project runs a tip line or something like that. Yeah. What is that? And is that the ICE tip line, or is it something different?
No, that's something different. But it's also, you know, it's a big scam is really what it is. It's a very well-funded, like, operator service for the federal government to field, like, prostitution alerts from random citizens, pretty much. It's, you know, they a lot of states now require this to be posted places too, and say, you know, you should call the National Human Trafficking Hotline. They also say that on a lot of the Blue Campaign, the Homeland Security materials. But basically what happens when they call is they tally them up and say, you know, it can be anybody just saying, I saw this and I think it's something bad, whatever. It can be someone saying, you know, like, I'm in prostitution and I kind of want out, but I don't know how. Whatever it is, they don't offer anything directly. They say, okay, well, here's a charity in your area you could reach out to. Here's the police, you know, here's the number of the police in your area and stuff. And then they tally how many calls they got, and then they record those cases of sex trafficking. And just today I was looking at the White House website, and it, you know, it quoted this, and all the time media and places quote, well, they've seen, you know, a this much increase in the cases of sex trafficking, but cases just count as calls to their phone line. So that's the first scam. And then the other thing is that, you know, I've heard from so many people that they try to, you know, the services that are in their areas that Polaris refers them to, they don't have any funding because it's all going to these big sort of crony charities. They don't have any funding, the things that actually have shelters or actually provide, you know, education and things like that. So, and obviously people could just call 911 if they're trying to reach their local police. So basically all it does is sort of exist to be a clearinghouse through the federal system for all of these concerns, instead of like letting this play out when necessary at a law and order level, at the local level, and, you know, otherwise just connecting people with services, social services in their areas.
I think one of the really interesting things and compelling things about your story that's up at Reason.com, are you a woman traveling alone? Marriott might be watching you. But you write, and I'm quoting here, in several recent high-profile cases, airline staff trained to spot traffickers have harassed interracial couples and families. When people are asked to use gut instinct to stop real but rare horrors, relying on racial stereotypes and other biases tend to rule. Can you expand on that a little bit? Because this is not simply, I mean, you know, this is not simply, you know, well-meaning people, you know, kind of making mistakes, but it actually tends to kind of reify and reinforce pretty bad relations or power relations in contemporary society.
Right. And I mean, it still might be well-meaning people, but, you know, making mistakes. But you're right. It, like, the impact goes beyond that, because, you know, there were so many of this. I think the good comparison, just before to get this, the specific things, is like the post 9/11 climate, you know, where like a lot of well-meaning people were trying to report terrorists because everybody was telling them, like, look out for these signs, like, you can, you know, catch a terrorist. They're everywhere. But you can just tell us. And, you know, that just ended up with a lot of racial profiling, especially then of like Muslims and, you know, and middle people from the Middle East in general. And, you know, putting a lot of police contact in with these communities that then, you know, so often doesn't end well and things like that. But just for, you know, just sort of anybody that is, on the airlines so far, we've heard of, I don't know how many cases, but there's been at least two where it was, you know, an interracial couple. I think in both cases, an Asian woman and a white man. And then there's been a couple cases too, where I think there was a white woman with a black son, and there was something else with a dad. And so they've been, you know, stopped by, or pointed out by a flight attendant, and then sort of detained afterwards and questioned and asked to prove that they're the mother of the child, or to, you know, answer questions about their relationship and, you know, whatever. And it's all been based on very, very dubious things. I mean, the flight attendants have given reasons like, oh, well, they looked, you know, he looked like, in one of the cases with one of the couples, it was like, well, when she went to the bathroom, like, he kept looking back there at the bathroom to her, and then went back and went to the bathroom herself. And you're like, well, maybe he was just waiting for her to get out of the bathroom so that he could go. You know, it's all stuff that they make it couched. I mean, and maybe they really believe this, I think, but, you know, it sounds like, oh, we're just doing this because these are the signs we've been taught, and we've been taught sex traffickers are everywhere. But, like, it often comes down to these, stereotypes, especially about, you know, Asian women often being, you know, trafficking victims, and, you know, interracial couples sort of being suspicious, or family being suspicious to certain people at a sort of gut level. So I think it ends up with a lot of harassment.
Yeah, and you mention, or you also write, that a lot of the anti-trafficking rhetoric encourages focusing on class markers, listing shabby clothes or differences in dress compared to companions as warning signs. So that, you know, is another layer that gets thrown on this, right?
Yes, definitely. I mean, yeah, that's what I think, too, is just at hotels and stuff. Like, it's mostly just people who don't look like the kind of guests they think should be there are just going to be harassed too, based on this sort of stuff, you know.
So does anyone ever actually expose, you know, actual or systemic sex trafficking from these types of programs that you know about?
Not that I've heard of. I mean, the brief reply I got from Marriott, they said their program has resulted in a few kids being rescued from dangerous situations or something like that. But they didn't elaborate what those were or give any specifics. And I asked for more details, like, was there any, you know, and there's nothing. I guess in most cases,
they kind of don't fully want to admit, I mean, that any, I, you know, I they're in kind of a pickle, right? Because, I mean, on the one hand, they're getting the federal government, you know, saying like, hey, you know, it'd be a really good idea if you complied with our requests, not our demands, to, you know, become more, you know, sensitized to this issue. But then they also don't want to be bragging that, you know, there's so many sex trafficking victims in their hotel that, you know, and we're weeding them out as fast as we can, right?
Right. I mean, this just made me think. I saw a tweet today, someone sharing my story, also good intention. And then it seemed like a positive share. They were sympathetic to the plight of the sex workers, but they hashtagged it like Marriott Homeland Security hookers. I was like, you know, I don't condone the use of the word hookers usually, but I was like, I'd kind of like to start a campaign where everyone just tweets like Marriott and hookers together. So when you look for them, that's what they find.
Is there any reason to believe that sex trafficking, not prostitution, although, you know, I guess as a separate issue, that would also be interesting. But is there any reason to believe this sex trafficking is on the rise? Because there's no question that over the past 5 years or 10 years or whatever, you know, it just is being mentioned more. And I know from the work that I've done on the war on drugs, you know, that a lot of the times the media attention or the policy attention or the government law enforcement attention that an issue gets oftentimes has nothing to do with the underlying reality. But is sex trafficking on the rise? Is prostitution on the rise?
I mean, no, I don't think that there's any evidence to indicate either of those things are true. There's definitely no hard evidence, and I don't think that there's really any soft evidence to indicate that either. I think it's you know, a confluence of things, that one being that a lot of the prostitution business and sex, you know, related businesses in general moved online as opposed to in, you know, on streets or in the clubs or in the phone, you know, back pages of the phone book or whatever. So, you know, I think that that's made it a lot more visible to a lot of people, which has then made people a lot more freaked out.
Isn't that, I mean, it's kind of interesting and curious. I know when pornography went from being, you know, and I guess this was in the 80s with the rise of VCRs, pornography went from being a kind of social commons problem, because the only place you could go to see porn would be in actual theaters that had to be located in actual neighborhoods.
Right.
And people would be creeped out. And in a way, when pornography became something you could watch in the sanctity of your own bedroom or living room, it became more ubiquitous, but it became less of a social issue. But with prostitution, I mean, it's curious, because with it going online, or, you know, it would seem like that would alleviate a lot of the problems, because, you know, it's, people don't want streetwalkers, you know, marching up and down their block or turning tricks, you know, outside of a school or something like that. It would seem like we should be in an age where people kind of relax about it.
I think maybe on its own accord, it would have. There have been forces pushing it in another direction. And whereas with porn, when that happened, they sort of lost the porn crusaders, because as much as they were like, look, guys, there's porn everywhere, and also it's terrible and all these, you know, crazy harms, a lot of people watched porn online and they were like, yeah, no, that's not really true. Whereas, I mean, the proportion of people who are actually going out and seeking prostitution is much, much smaller. So it's much easier to persuade a large amount of people who could see online that there are ads for prostitution or other sorts of, you know, sexual services, and then they don't have personal experience with that. It's a lot easier to scare them, I guess. And there's a ton of documented evidence that the first, you know, sex trafficking law in the United States, which was baked in a lot of the start of like a lot of the bad elements of it that we're seeing. It was that the coalition of anti-porn Christians and anti-porn like radical feminists were needed something to do. They like sat around and decided like, all right, here's our campaign. Like, we're going to work on this now, because, you know, they'd actually had a lot of success sort of getting different porn initiatives passed at the margins about regulating online content and stuff. So then they were like, they teamed up and helped get a lot of bad things passed in the sex trafficking law. And that sort of bad coalition joined with just all sorts of government forces has, you know, created a lot of the problems that we've seen.
And then the media as well, right? I mean, because this, you know, it's a very, you know, it sounds horrible to say it, but it's, you know, sex trafficking, prostitution, it's a very titillating subject.
Right.
It speaks to,
I mean, some
to,
of the reporting
it's
is
like
so
serial
disgusting
killing
on
or
this.
Something. Yeah.
Because you see it, I mean, it's like barely contained the sort of lurid entertainment value in a lot of the like, oh, this is like a really, it's like tragedy porn a lot of the times when you see it coming from CNN or these, you know, Dateline specials or whatever.
You know, a few years back, you wrote a cover story for Reason that was called "The War on Sex Trafficking is the New War on Drugs." What did you mean by that? And how does that kind of put a button on some of what you were just saying?
Yeah, it was sort of watching, you know, because I started writing about this for Reason in 2014, and a lot of these forces have been going on, I mean, since the first sex trafficking law was in 2000. So this has been going on for a long time. And at this point, just like sort of looking back at the history of this and how the different incremental things had been happening, and it definitely has ramped up in the past 5 years. So it's, you know, but the steps that it's taken have really mirrored the steps taken in the drug war, you know, where it was like where it was sort of taking a thing that is between consenting adults, you know, prostitution between consenting adults, or, you know, it was like the drug war taking people just personally using drugs and you know, but groups wanting to stop that and saying, okay, well, how do we turn that into making it seem like, you know, how do we make that a scarier problem? And then sort of law enforcement seizing on that and politicians seizing on that. And so it just sort of spirals into this thing where there's a constant want to be seen as doing something about what has now been, you know, created and framed as this giant human rights problem or crime
and
problem.
There's that, I mean, the commonality of the, you know, the history of drug prohibition and to a certain degree, alcohol prohibition, both in the 19th and 20th century in America is demonizing, you know, or associating a set of activities or a set of substances with, you know, particular others who tend to be immigrant or tend to be foreign, who tend to be disease ridden. I mean, you get a lot of that in the war on drugs, you know, marijuana and Mexicans, cocaine and blacks. And of course, in the war on drugs, there was like the whole fear of, you know, opium dens on the West Coast run by Chinese people is that white women would go there and sleep with Asian men, which is, you know, something that was seen as incompatible with, you know, Western civilization. And then I guess there's also the fact, I mean, this, to me, the nexus seems to be with a lot of the sex trafficking stuff is that it's almost always talking about people crossing the border in order to come here and be trafficked or you know, coyotes, you know, human traffickers take women from foreign countries who are somehow incapable of speaking for themselves or have no rights, have no freedom. And with that, let's turn to Donald Trump's claims in the State of the Union, because he talked about traffickers bringing unwilling women across the border, and I'm quoting him, in wide open areas, you know, so between ports of entry, he was talking about. And he talked about the 1,500 arrests of traffickers by federal agents or agencies last year. Is there any truth to that, or is he just making it up?
I don't really know where he's getting that from. So you know, I can't say for sure that no. There was a Pizzagate QAnon. There are conspiracy theorists who think, you know, there's a lot of like secret satanic Democrats having an international sex trafficking ring.
Right. Well, in this, the Pizzagate story, which came out of the leaked John Podesta emails, but it was at a pizza joint. Pizza restaurant in D.C. and there were some cryptic references in some emails, and that generated a whole theory that there was some kind of child sex ring, a pedophilia ring, run in the basement of this building, which does not, or restaurant, which doesn't actually have a basement. But it became really big news, partly because a guy showed up and shot the place up. He didn't actually harm anybody, but that's pretty creepy.
Yeah, and there's this whole, you know, conspiracy that's sort of evolved out of that too now. And one of the main people behind it, she had written a thing saying that Trump had, you know, arrested 1,500 sex traffickers or something. And I actually, this was like a year ago and I wrote about it, but it's sort of become a thing that gets passed around these crazy conspiracy corners that like he's arrested this many. The White House says, there's a White House press release at the beginning of January saying that there were some 1,500 something, you know, human traffickers arrests in 2018, but it doesn't provide any specifics. And there's nothing really on any, I mean, usually whenever anybody's arrested on anything related, even, you know, prostitution charges and stuff, there's a lot of press releases, and, you know, ICE puts out press releases when it arrests people on and prosecutes them. So there's been none of that. There's been no media stories. It's obviously impossible to say, like, there's secret, you know, a lot of secret ICE arrests. But I think what's probably more likely is you do see a lot of ICE arrests where they are, say, we, you know, did a human trafficking operation and then we arrested this many people. And then you look at what the arrests actually were for. And it's a huge array of different things, like some prostitution, some just drug crimes, people, you know, just people who are either undocumented or who have overstayed their visas, you know, and things like that. So they round up, they sort of to use these human trafficking operations to round up a lot of people. And so that might be what, you know, he's sort of, Trump was sort of translating there. But there's definitely no evidence that, you know, there are thousands all the time of people being trafficked across the border. I mean, and even sort of people in various levels of government have written about this. And, you know, some of the charities that I don't even really like, you know, I think mostly spread a lot of falsehoods. But, you know, even a lot of them will even say, like, look, it's not when sex trafficking or, you know, forced prostitution, anything you want, whatever you want to call it, exists in the United States. It's not primarily or even largely a problem of people coming across the borders. And when it is, it's the sort of really strict immigration policies that Trump is pushing that then, you know, that does encourage it when it does happen.
So, well, and this is a good kind of topic to close out the discussion with, which is, you know, what's the best way forward then on sex trafficking, you know, which is, you know, in its platonic form is, you know, as heinous a crime as one might imagine. What are the best ways to combat sex trafficking?
Well, so before we get to the end of this podcast, I did want to mention real quick, you know, another big part of the Marriott story that I wrote that went up at Reason yesterday is that, you know, they've been sort of asking people to upload pictures of their hotels to this Homeland Security run FBI adjacent sort of app you can use to send pictures of your hotels, and they're saying that they're matching those against escort ads to help, you know, stop trafficking. And so I started looking into this, and it's this huge effort that's been going on from 2014 to 2017 and has now evolved into other things. It involves NASA and the Department of Defense, and basically they've been archiving escort review and ads, and also gun sales, you know, guns like armslist.com, which is kind of like a Craigslist for guns, those and various things like that. They've been saving everything from them for those years, and then using them to build all these tools, which is scary because, you know, they're collecting all this data on people that they have now saved and are just sharing with all these different partners.
So how does that work with the photos? Like, you know, they get a picture of a Marriott hotel room. Let's say it's a Marriott Marquis or something. And then they match that, or they create a database and they try to match that against an escort ad to...
Yeah, and they were using this archive of escort ads that they made to sort of teach the machine to recognize ads. So they were pretty much just using the escort ads as a tool to teach it how to recognize locations better. So, which is what a lot of this stuff based on, you know, using sex workers and gun owners as sort of the guinea pigs to develop these tools that now DARPA is openly saying, like, we want to use this across social platforms. I mean, it's facial recognition, recognition,
what do they do with
stuff.
That then? I mean, is it just to, I guess I'm struggling to understand exactly what they would be using that for in specific ways.
So far, you know, there's about like 40 different research papers that have been used on it. They had like 17 different partners across like private and things. So they've just been using this archive of ads and archived materials for a ton of research on developing online social media monitoring tools. One of the tools was about how to break into password protected forums and things like that. So they've been and the traffic cam, the one that takes pictures of the hotel rooms, is just one of the tools that they developed as part of this.
So it turns out that Marriott really is spying on everybody, or I guess not Marriott,
it's part of a giant system. And so so if you're interested in knowing more about that, you should read my article, people, because it's kind of complicated, but there's a lot of really scary information. And I think there's still going to be a lot more coming out about this and mining this material for more information. There's just a lot going on there. But
I mean, it definitely seems to be the case that, you know, the whole idea of anonymity is rapidly disappearing, if it hasn't already. Between our cell phones, between our, you know, and I guess part of it is that we're uploading most of this information ourselves willingly, right? So, but you can piece together a pretty good, you know, trail of what anybody is doing in a given day if you have access to their phone cell logs, you know, and pinging towers for location, plus social media, plus whatever. You can kind of piece together what everybody's doing on any given day.
That was one of their projects too. One of the papers was about how to trace people across multiple platforms who do use different usernames and things on them. So, a lot of scary stuff. And this, you know, the initial 3 years of it, they spent at least $67 million on sort of setting up and developing the start of this, you know, escort ad database, more or less, to be used to make tools to spy on us all. So to answer your question from earlier about one way to help, you know, actually address the problems of, mm-hmm. of exploitation in the sex industry and things like that, it's to not spend $76 million building an ad and like doing deep emoji analysis and to use money like that. Raise money and use money that can be used for like direct material needs, like emergency shelters and helping mm-hmm. people with food and, you know, transportation and finding jobs outside of it. Because usually it's not in the United States, in most of the context that we're talking about, it's not people who are literally being, you know, sequestered and forced and, you know, not allowed to leave. It's people who are being sort of controlled in, you know, more subtle means by someone who's, you know, started off being a boyfriend and then it turns into mm-hmm. sort of a domestic abuse thing, or just what we think of as stereotypical pimps. Like, you know, it's just, it's generally, or people who are undocumented immigrants and people, you know, threaten to turn them into ICE. So it's just, it's generally, we need things like a more safe environment for these people to come forward and more things that can help victims with immediate, right. you know, survival outside of these, this exploitation. And, you know, instead we've just got people building these massive, crazy databases and trying to, you know,
Is there a sense that prostitution is becoming more acceptable and it might be legalized or decriminalized in more areas? Because that's also, I know in some of your work about, you know, the laws that you mentioned, like FOSTA and whatnot, which made it more difficult for escorts or prostitutes to advertise online and to, you know, kind of check out people ahead of time. It tends to push people into the streets or into less safe practices. You know, and it seems like legalization or decriminalization of prostitution would help to, you know, I mean, this is true of anything. And again, the parallel with the war on drugs is, you know, is pretty appropriate here, that, you know, when you have black markets create all kinds of pathologies independent of the activity that's being prohibited. But so, you know, would legalizing or decriminalizing prostitution help? And is that at all, is there a groundswell for that?
It would totally 100% help. I think there is a large groundswell for that amongst sort of ordinary people and amongst a coalition on sort of the right and left, actually. But I think it's impossible in this current climate because of the because of politics, and because it's become so useful for so many people, from these very high profile charities to celebrities, like a lot of Hollywood celebrities mm-hmm. have gotten in on this anti-trafficking cause, to politicians from, you know, Bush to Obama to Trump to all of their agencies, who have been able to use it to perpetuate all sorts of different, you know, policies, whether it's going after immigrants or sort of appearing to, you know, really care about violence against women. And it's just mm-hmm. it's always some agenda that's sort of built up around it. But at this point, we've built up so many. I mean, there are so much money going to different FBI, to different law enforcement sting operations against this, that it's just like almost impossible, I think, to do it right now. But luckily, prostitution is not a federal crime. So that's the one bright side, is that, you know, cities and states and stuff, like various areas, could do things on their own if they can, like, so you don't have to have a thing where you get everyone to agree, at least. That's, I guess, that's the kind of bright spot. You can do experiments in this.
So the laboratories of democracy are really going to become a bunch of different whorehouses. That's what I'm hearing.
Whorehouses of democracy, baby.
Yeah. I think they're already, you know, we have the infrastructure built for that. They're called state capitals, right? So there's one in every state.
I would condone that.
well, we are going to leave it there. We have been talking with Elizabeth Nolan Brown. She's an associate editor at Reason, and she has a fantastic new article up, which is called "Are You a Woman Traveling Alone? Marriott Might Be Watching You." She also commented on the State of the Union address and Donald Trump's claims about sex trafficking, the frequency of it, as well as the steps that he's taken to combat it. Liz, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
This has been the Reason Podcast. I've been your host, Nick Gillespie. Please subscribe to us at Apple, at Google, at Spotify, at Reason.com, wherever you get your podcasts, and let us know what you think about what we're doing. Thanks for listening.